We weren't included, that's women, in clinical trials until 1993. I didn't even feature on my sort of to-do list, care for me list, what do I need to do to look after myself? You have 1,000 problems in life until you have a health problem, and then you only have one. Thinking about, you know, my future years wasn't even on my radar.
The 20th century was about extending lifespan. The 21st century is about extending health span. Hello and welcome to Own Your Health with me, Katie Brindle, and gorgeous friend and esteemed colleague Kate Roham is here today on the sofa. We're going to be talking today a lot about prevention and not cure, which is something which is deep in the heart of the principles of Chinese medicine. We have many sayings, one of which is a drop of prevention is a bucket of cure. Now, Kate has just written her second book, hot off the pursuit of the first one, which was a bestseller. She's now got The Longevity Solution, which is this one here. And really what she's talking very much here is also about the narrative of prevention and not cure and what it is that you need to do to make sure that you shorten the gap as much as you possibly can between health span and lifespan. Now, this is very much what 21st century medicine needs to be all about. In the 20th century, there was a huge great gap between the beginning and the end. At the beginning, life expectancy was roughly 45 years. By the end, that had moved to roughly 85 years. But the concept of a long life equaling a healthy life transformed itself during the course of that century because it didn't mean you were healthy just because you lived a long age. So thought leaders such as Kate are coming in here telling us the kind of techniques which are simple to apply, which are going to make a massive difference to making sure that there is a clear alignment between health span and lifespan. And in an ideal world, they're completely joined. So, Kate, over to you. What do we do?
I love that. And do you know, I love the way that you've, I just love the way that you've explained that as well, because I often find myself when I'm talking about longevity and like health span and lifespan, and I'm there going, da-da-da-da. But actually, you're totally right. They need to be aligned.
Yes, they need to be like that. Otherwise, you're going to be writhing around in an NHS hospital bed for however long or on medication.
And that's the most that's the terrifying thing. And actually what I often say is, you know, lifespan is the number of candles you'll blow out on your cake, hopefully, because there may be that kind of, you know, little bit of your health span where actually you have to then get people to help you blow out the candles on your cake, and you don't want that.
No.
You know, you want to be there, being that person, being active, being mobile, you know, being functional for as long as possible. And
can I just say one thing there actually on that, that just FYI, lifespan of a human being is actually 150 years. And a dead silence in the room. James is looking at me off camera going, you've got to be fucking kidding. But it's true. A human body can live for 150. Yeah. No, we're not, because we put too much crap into ourselves. But 150 years is what is available. I'm aiming for 100.
Yeah, wouldn't that be lovely? Because actually, I would love to see my
100.
great.
A healthy
great,
100.
Yes, a healthy
that's
100.
Oh,
we can do it together.
Should have called it that.
Yes.
But that's what we're calling the episode.
New title.
A healthy 100.
A healthy 100.
Feels like bingo.
New title for a new book. But you're right, I'm 50 this year. So
yeah.
Actually, I'm really excited about it. And actually, I do feel like I have got, without doubt, another 50 years left in me. And I want those 50 years to be good, quality, fun, joyful, vitality. And we have a great book to do it.
She's literally written the script for herself. Just
but
do this.
It's a really hard thing, because I think for women in particular, obviously, who I've based the book on, we do live in a society which there's been obviously a massive, massive gender health gap for a very long time.
Right.
So we are hugely underserved when it's come to research, when it's come to, you know, modern medicines that might help us with various different ailments. The research isn't there. And actually, that was part of the book where I was, you know, quite intrigued by some of the statistics that kind of came to light. I think the biggest one for me was that we weren't included, that's women, in clinical trials until 1993. And I'm kind of thinking, like, in 1993, I was like a full-blown person actually doing stuff. You know, that is really quite recent.
And even then, even though we were started to be included, we're off. It's not 50-50.
No.
Because main reason being, it's probably some kind
we're
of...
We're very complicated.
Yes, because it's very hard to do medical trials on a body which is moving around every day because it's in alignment to the moon, whereas
yeah.
a masculine body is in alignment to the sun, which is a much steadier influence. And so it's very hard to do trials because no two bodies are the same.
Well, and also, I think...
The woman's body isn't even in sync with each other.
With the hormones and then obviously pregnancy and things like that. They seem to be excuses because it doesn't... We should have trials. We should have things that are meant for women, tested on women.
Mm.
And I think that for me was one of the things that was a real eye-opener. And that women are living longer than men... but in poorer health, you know, and that is because, for a lot of women, and obviously sweeping statement, but predominantly we are the caregivers in a home. So we take on the emotional load for children a lot of the time. And that actually, I suppose, is where I have found myself in this midlife phase, coming into my 40s. You know, I had my third child late, but my dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, so I was caring for him. I was running a business. I was getting the kids to school. They were going through puberty. I had their emotional load. You know, and so as women, we bear so much. I didn't even feature on my sort of to-do list, care for me list, what do I need to do to look after myself? And actually thinking about, you know, my future years wasn't even on my radar. And I think that that is the point for so many women. When everything is there, it's our health and our well-being that suffers because we don't have time for it.
Oh my God. Okay, sorry. That is such a brilliant quote. Like, do you feature on your to-do list? Okay, so one thing in your book, which I really loved, was you were talking about the importance of community.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about that. We met through our communities.
Yeah,
we did.
Through community.
So, and then you talk about it in your book. And I think one of the things you were just saying there, because you were just describing a whole pile of chaos, and we're all just sitting there going, oh my God, we're completely screwed. No, you're not.
No, 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 no.
Okay, no. What Kate's done a brilliant job there is just describing the absolute mayhem that is going on out there. If you do not just simply light up the North Star and just go, right. The great thing about being a middle-aged woman is we're really good at sorting everything out.
Yeah.
So the first thing to say is you need to be featured on your to-do list, and we both will talk about that in a minute. But secondly, the thing that I think females do brilliantly well instinctively is we are really, really good at harnessing our power through community.
Yes.
So do you want to talk a bit about that? Because you talk about it in your book a lot, and I found it really, like, great when I read that. It was interesting.
For me, the community bit was important, because I think when we've talked about that messiness that we went through, and also I really do also want to say this, because I think never more so now has that power of connection and community become more important, because you've mentioned COVID and that's where we met. COVID has a lot to answer for, because it gave us all an excuse to hide behind screens and to forge, whether they're friendships, whether they're communities, whatever, but not that in real life human connection, which is so important. A touch, a hello, how are you, you know, face to face is so much more telling than an on-screen kind of relationship. And I think that many, many women, myself included, got really comfortable just sort of being and existing in that world behind a screen. And for so many people to now, you know, they're still breaking out of that and kind of coming into these real life events, because I'm still hearing people go to events and go, oh, it's so nice to be and meet people in real life, as if COVID was kind of only last year. So I think that has actually had a massive impact for a lot of people, women possibly again in particular, who are having to, you know, kind of pull the families together and again be that the joy that was needed at that time within the house. And that comes with a massive emotional burden.
So one thing on that actually is, I think the headline I would give on that one is embrace the analog. Okay, so I have absolutely embraced the analog. I think, as you were saying, in COVID, is that, you know, we were forced to embrace, like, you know, high tech, and because we had no choice, and that's the only way we could connect and communicate. But actually, I think there is a massive movement now to re-embracing the analog. Certainly with my younger children, I'm observing that they came in the tech generation. Yeah. They're now rejecting it. They're buying vinyl records. They're actually meeting each other in cafes. Yeah. They are putting their phones away. They're reading books again. They're going back into kind of normal ways of communication and absorbing information, because it's not all that great, the new shiny toy in the room. And I think as women, giving yourself permission to re-embrace the analogue is a really good thing.
Yeah.
It is so nice.
But it is, you know, stepping away from that and putting yourself back into a community and meeting with people is huge. And actually, the reason I drew on that and sort of talked about that in my book was having watched, obviously, The Blue Zones by Dan Buettner.
Which is also in your
which
book.
Which is also in the book.
Many
which
of
is
them in Asia.
Live to 100.
And in this little corner of West London.
And this corner of West London.
There's a massive blue zone in this house.
Yeah. Okay, so that is it, right? So this is exactly it. So when I was reading that, I was like, hang on a minute. You know, it's I think we read these things and it's like, well, I can't do that because I don't live in Okinawa. I don't live in Loma Linda. I don't live in Ikaria, which is where all these places, you know, have these blue zones.
And they're walking uphill and they're all eating oily fish.
You can create your own blue zone at home. And that again was one of the things I said.
Right, let's talk about that. Let's get into the meat here, right? Okay, so this is brilliant, okay? Because this is what I love about Kate, because we're coming at the same information from different heritages. And this is what happened when we first met, actually in COVID, on on our live, and you had your previous book and so did I, we were talking about just this. And you're in South London, I'm in West London, and we are creating our own blue zones.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are we doing to create them?
That exercise, diet, mental health. And those are the three things that
community.
I focus on mine. Well, so it was that sort of thing where I put community under mental health, because I think having a community can help with mental health.
So isolation is really
isolation.
Bad for us.
And also I think it's really important. There's one thing that I always say, like, I think when I was in my kind of crux, which was sort of the first book was based on that kind of perimenopause chaos that we've talked about. You know, loneliness often isn't just you being on your own. Loneliness can be like a whole state of how you feel. You can feel lonely in the chaos of your life.
Or in a crowd.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is really important to say, because I think when people are trying to think, well, am I lonely? You know, it doesn't just have to be that you are isolated from people. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was about pulling on those three pillars. So obviously exercise, which has been absolutely instrumental in my flourishing, you know, flourishment of what I do in my years. And I know that without doubt, that is going to be the one thing that will carry me through till 100, because I will be mobile, I will be strong, I will have that muscle.
When I met you, that was the angle, that's how I perceived you.
Yeah.
That's how you came across. You were all over your Instagram with your weights and your leotards and looking amazing. And I was there, it was me just kind of like with my gua sha crystal. But, you know, we're far
complimenting
more
each other.
Well, absolutely, and still do. Okay, but how much exercise, A, do you do?
Yep.
And how much should you do? And how on earth are we supposed to fit it all in?
Yeah, okay, it's a great question, actually, because I do a lot less than I used to do, because I used to think that I had to do more. And I think that for a lot of people, is where they have come from. You know, we kind of came from a demographic, let's say the ones that are perhaps our age at the moment, that exercise was always about an aesthetic. So it was about be smaller, you know, don't take up so much space, don't eat so much food, you know, exercise for hours on end. If you miss an exercise day, it's going to completely impact everything that perhaps you're trying to strive for, which for many women is always a weight-related goal. And it wasn't until I really got into the bones of what exercise can do for us as we age and why we need to do it, that I was like, actually, everything I'm doing, and it's not wrong because movement is still good, but it's not serving my body. And some of the symptoms that were probably perimenopause were possibly also symptoms of overtraining. So my Instagram account actually started as HIIT for life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the high intensity interval training. And I was doing that all the time. And I had joint aches and pains. I was, you know, night sweats, moody, not eating enough. So yes, of course, that could be perimenopause, but without doubt, and I think you'll probably agree with me, my adrenals were probably just fatigued, my cortisol through the roof. Mm. You know, we need cortisol, yes, but for a lot of women, when they come into this phase, obviously estrogen is declining, it's an anti-inflammatory, cortisol levels rise, you're just a melee of kind of hormones waiting in this like bubbling pot.
It's like ping pong,
and
isn't it?
Yeah, and you just don't know what you're doing. And so I was like, okay, so this isn't serving me. So I looked and I did the research, because this was when women, we weren't really talking about strength training, kind of when I started this, like 9 or 10 years ago, it was talked about, but I don't think anyone was trying to bang on like I do about how important this is as we age. Our muscle mass declines from around about the age of 30 at 3-5% per year. Our bone density peaks at the age of 30. Everything we're doing is, you know, we need to be building up because it's breaking down at a bigger rate than we're able to. So it's kind of little things like that. And I was like, okay, well, how do we do it? And it was weights. And I can tell you, that was like a dagger to the heart, because I didn't know how to lift weights. I didn't want to lift weights. And I know we're going to come to it. I didn't want to bulk up. I didn't want
or
injure myself. And I didn't really understand what is weight, you know,
and
what
I still
does it
don't
like?
Actually, which is why I'm so excited that we're now going into this, because this is the first thing when Kate came in today after we did the whole sort of like la 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 was right, weight.
Like, for me, I don't want women to continually think about the aesthetics, but I have to be absolutely honest and real that for a lot of women, it's confidence. For a lot of women, you know, they want to wear clothes that they want to wear, so they do want to change that thing that might bother them or bug them. And I think that's okay.
You said a really interesting thing earlier, which is our generation a lot, because, you know, we're 20th century women. It was all about being smaller, being petite, being little, la, 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 la. But actually, as a 21st century woman, I want to feel strong.
Yeah.
I want to feel strong. And I want to feel strong I want to feel long and strong, okay? I don't want to feel lean and mean, and I don't want to be diddy because it's not my body type, but I do want to feel strong because that will give me, because I need to be strong.
Yeah.
I've got a lot pivoting around me right now. My children need me strong. My consciously uncoupled, wonderful ex-partner who I'm still really good friends with wants me to be strong, and I need him to be strong too because we still get on really, really well. My future partner, wherever they are, you know, I need to be strong for my father. I need to be strong.
You want to be able to swing them around, don't you? Well, that future partner.
Yeah, but also, like, I do want to sort of live, like, be strong, live long. Yeah. I think that's kind of where we're going with this. And if what you're saying is actually one of the missing links here is actually sustainably using heavy weights as part of that to make me feel strong, then that's a great empowering thing.
It is. It really is. And I think
I'm new to the party.
And I do think
you've been there for years.
I know.
Obviously banging your drum.
But
me not ignoring listening
that's
to
that's the
you.
Point, isn't it? And I do think like we were saying as well, I think it's that fear of the unknown, of where to start. It's fear of bulking up. It's what do I need to change? How do I fit it in? Like all of these things are really, really overwhelming for women. But if you are doing Pilates, if you are doing yoga, all of those things are really good. But there comes a point where the only way you can build muscle is you have to challenge the stimulus. You need to add something. Mm. And when you challenge that muscle, you break it down and then you build it up. That is not going to happen unless you progressively overload. And I think that with all of this comes a lot of confusion for women because we have, and I said this, medical experts, sports scientists talking about the fundamentals of lifting weights. And I love that because I love knowledge. But for some women, it's just like, just tell me what I need to do. So
yeah, literally, I just need to know.
I don't want
the
fluff.
What am I doing? I don't care. The science is done. You've done that for me. I know it's true. So what do I do?
Okay,
what do we do? So if I were to say
to someone, you don't need that much time. Try to have 3 sets of weights if you can.
And they also work for clearing negative energy in your home.
so you kind of have 3 sets of weights. You might decide to pick, let's say, 4 exercises.
Oh, I thought you said 4 kilos.
No, we will get those. But so we'll go with, we've got 16 and 4. Okay, so we've got the kettlebells. So it's slightly different. But you might go with a squat because obviously that's a massively important, exercise for all over body strength.
Does that not damage my knees?
No. You see, no, because also you want to build up your quads because then your knees are protected. And actually for women, again, we have a very weak posterior chain. Right. So it's really important that we focus. And actually you've got the kettlebells here. So let's add that exercise in, which would be an RDL.
Right.
So that's going to then train your hamstrings.
RDLs?
Romanian deadlift, which you can do with a barbell. You can do them with dumbbells. You can do them with kettlebells. But when you say to your knee, it's interesting because like we said earlier, when we talked about that midriff, for me, it would be saying to somebody, okay, I get that it's confidence, but are you getting pain anywhere else? And if they would go, well, it's my lower back. Okay, well, so it is your core. So we need to work on your core. With your knee, the pain isn't always the knee. It's what's supporting it. So it will be your quads and your hamstrings.
Okay, so for the audience listening to this, watching this at home, and they've never done heavy weights ever.
Yep.
Okay, so, I mean, surely you don't just go from like nothing to 16
kilos. No, you don't. You don't at all.
No.
So I would say, so I've got a great beginner's course, which you're going to start. What I do in that particular course is I say, start with, look, 2 kg or 3 kg, kind of work out what works for you. Have a set of 3 kg, 5 kg. So you always want to have 3 sets of weights, differing weights that are, you know, one slightly heavier than the other.
So
let's say you've got 4s. What else? What's that one?
4s, that's a 16.
16, and we've got a 24 here. Okay, right. Now you wouldn't necessarily do it in that
James
order.
James lifted the 24. He was Mr. Muscle
I can also lift 24.
There.
Very competitive.
I know, right? You are literally
in fact, I lifted 2 of them the other day. No. So essentially, if you're starting, go for 2s, 4s, and maybe 6s.
So this is a 4.
Yeah.
I don't
so your lower body, or predominantly with women, is going to be a little bit stronger than our upper body.
Yeah.
And actually, it's so funny because I used to hate upper body, and now it's my favourite thing. So I always teach upper body on a Monday, and I'm like, it's Monday, and it's upper body, and I love that. But you would, for your first round, if you were exercising with me, we would have 4 or 5 moves, and we would start that first round with that lower weight, and we would probably aim to do around about 12 to 14 reps of each exercise.
And how many minutes of my life have I got to dedicate to this? How many times a week?
You should strength train 3 to 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
But this little circuit that I might put together, so all the workouts that I do in the beginner's course are around about 25 minutes, and there's 4 a week. And I've split them up, upper body, lower body, because again, I've split them up so that when you do your upper body on one day, lower body another day, then you've got a day recovery, you come back to the upper body. So your upper body's had 2 days to recover because recovery is just as important because obviously that's where your muscle is growing.
And does that then mean, Less so at the moment. My exercise regime is I go for a walk every single morning because I absolutely love it, and that's non-negotiable. And anyway, his lordship here, it's also non-negotiable for him, because like the minute I start even breathing in a different way at 5 a.m. he starts going like this, is it now, and he has to wait. I know, he knows. And then obviously I practice Qigong, which is just really for my energy circuit in the morning. And then it's yoga and Pilates. And that's probably 5 sessions a week of either yoga or Pilates, which I really enjoy. So I love what I do. There's no like dragging myself off to anything. I also do a bit of spinning with my daughters because they enjoy it.
Spinning's fun. That's
great. But I like it. Yeah. It's like, to me, it's like going to a nightclub.
It's such fun.
It's such a laugh. I'm like literally bobbing along.
The adrenaline after that one is great.
Yeah, I just really, it's like a party. So that to me isn't exercise either, because it's just fun. So what do I need to stop doing to bring this
in? I would never stop doing anything if you really like it. If you haven't got time, I would say, you know, maybe drop one of the sessions. If you're doing the program, maybe just like fully commit to that and see how that makes you feel. And I think that that for some people is the door that then opens, and it's the door that they should have opened way before.
Well, and it's because they're doing it at home.
And you're doing it at home. But I think sometimes we think, well, if I'm doing all that already. So for instance, like I'm running the London Marathon. So I'm running the London Marathon. So I've got to do my training for the London Marathon, but I also want to keep my strength. Strength is incredibly important when you are also running. And I think when we do these different disciplines, you know, you still have to have that underlying level of strength, because that will help with endurance, it will help with everything. So for instance, I trained, so I did weights Monday, I actually did a HIIT yesterday, I did a run this morning before coming here, I'll do lower body tomorrow, I'll do full body on Friday, and then I'll probably do a long run on Saturday, I'll rest Sunday, and then Monday again will be upper body. So I kind of work it and train it like that, but none of the exercises need to be, or none of those sessions need to be particularly long. And
no,
so, for instance,
that's
what you could do, seriously, with your weights. You pick 4 exercises. So let's say 2 lower, 2 upper. So we've got our RDLs, we've got our squats, which we've said. Obviously, we want to make sure that we can, you know, bring plates up and down out of cupboards for as long as possible. So we could put an overhead press in there. And then obviously making sure that, because we spend a lot of time at our desks, we're not slumped over, we could go with a bent over row. Okay, so we've got 4 exercises that will help with your core as well. Right. All of those exercises will help with your core, because in order to prevent injury in your lower back or anywhere else, you are going to have to use the deep core muscles and engage them to lift the weights. Mm. The other incredible thing about lifting weights, and I can't bleat on about that part enough, is the mental health side. So for me, and again, I'm only speaking from my personal experience and what works for me, it doesn't necessarily work for everybody. Yoga, Pilates, I'm too busy still thinking about that mental load we talked about, like getting so-and-so from A to B. Did I organise pickup? Did we learn the poem that we had to learn for school? Like,
it's book day. Don't
talk to me. For me, when I lift those weights, like we're saying, I'm connecting my brain and my mind and my body, and I'm thinking, am I lifting heavy enough? Am I doing it correctly? You're also having to count your reps, right? So you're having to focus on what you're doing. And I don't think about anything else.
So 2 things came to mind as you said that. One is there's a kind of primal thing about heaviness, because remember, human beings, obviously, so from Chinese medicine, everything that I talk about has come from thousands of years of accumulated knowledge from some seriously intelligent people connected to the world around them. So what have human beings traditionally done? We've had to lift heavy things like
hunter-gatherers,
water. And animal carcasses. Yeah. And just generally building things with your bare hands and surviving. I mean, you know, that kind of goes into some primal thing, which I know I can target from when I've done, e.g. ice bathing.
Yeah.
And when I've done ice bathing in the Arctic, that was a whole new ballgame. I mean, not technically the water can't get any colder than what I've had in London. But when you're already in -32 degrees and you are already freezing, it is a whole different ballgame. And it takes you to a very different place. And I think dead heavyweights are going to do the same. But so technically, heavy lifting, heavy loading is something that human beings are obviously designed to do naturally. But it somehow, nevertheless, to me, feels very at loggerheads with then the concept of stretching. So bodies need to stretch. Bodies absolutely do. The liver energy is very much about stretching. So this is compressing. So tell me.
But it works well together. So I would always say, if you are doing your strength training, you need to make sure that you do A, obviously warm up, and B, you cool down with some really good fundamental stretching. Because if you do exactly that, if you just keep loading and loading and loading, you're going to get a very constricted body.
And
you will become, well, it's not the bulking actually happens when you, so your muscles have tiny little tears when you load them. So you, it sounds gross, but you rip your muscles.
Yeah.
I mean, not like rip them, but little
micro
tears.
That's like microdermabrasion. That's the same thing. You're literally tearing the skin.
And so as they repair, they build this.
Yes,
so you need that, exactly, that recovery piece, which would be a great stretch, red light therapy if you can, you know, maybe cold water therapy, a lovely walk, like little things like that. Your body does need to have that rest. Sleep, obviously massively important when your body is going through that recovery process. But that's obviously what helps alongside build that lean muscle. But, you know, going back to that primal thing, I think you're absolutely right. Like women were strong. They lift crazy stuff. And I think that's for me, when women are like, well, I'm not going to be able to lift that. And I'm like, well, you probably just went shopping and had a million shopping bags that were heavier than a set of dumbbells that you're thinking that you're going to lift. Like we do underestimate ourselves. And I think
of housework, actually, just back in the day, because women traditionally did, I mean, still do. I always say, go back to Downton Abbey, because I'm not saying it was right, but it's just saying human beings were much more aligned to the natural circuit at that point. And yes, it was obviously a class system. But the point is that when you look at what the working class people were doing there and actually physically moving things around, manual labour was creating like heavy wet blankets, heavy wet sheets, beating carpets. Yeah. You know, you didn't just run a Hoover around, you had to pick the rug up and you had to literally whack it for ages on end. I mean, this is heavy stuff.
I mean, I think for me as well, it's that thing that I just love being independent and I love being strong. And I know that in any situation, pretty much, I would be able to move what I need to move and I'd be able to pick up what I need to pick up. And if I wanted to have a fire, I'd be able to carry the logs and get them there. Like that for me feels really powerful. I think as we age, when it kind of comes to, you know, talking further on from, you know, whacking carpets, literally being able to get on and off a sofa, being able to get up and down stairs, on and off a loo. You know, my mum lives on her own. Your mum, jam jars. Opening jam jars, opening bottles, like that is what we should be training for. But so many people aren't. And I think once you reframe what you're training for and what your why is, that's when the flip, certainly for me, the switch certainly flipped for me, was at that moment, which was I am training so that I can do all of those things independently on my own for as long as possible, and I am strong. And, you know, it doesn't mean that we have to go and do, like I've talked about, high rocks or these crazy competitions. But for me, when I throw myself in those arenas with loads of other people that are really strong, and you're different ages and stages, and there are people who are 20 and there are people who are 80 and they're doing these incredible things, I find that so powerful to see, you know, and that is community in itself. And I just don't understand, I think, sometimes why people don't want to gift themselves that opportunity.
It's really, that's very wise words. And one thing to say is that obviously both of us, to a certain extent, do what we do in extremis to make a point.
Yes.
So we're not, so like, just because I do ice bathing, but what I would say to the mainstream is, well, you don't have to stop flinging yourself around the Arctic, you know, but just try a bit of a slosh of cold water in the shower, just as part of, like, I was having a shower this morning and it was all so nice up there this morning. I'd had a really nice walk. I had all the warm water. It was a hair washing day because I'm filming today. So in came the warm water and I was like, la, 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 so nice. Like, oh, I've got to do the cold. And I did it, obviously, because, you know, and oh, yes, it was a little bit painful because I wasn't really in the mood this morning. But then afterwards, I felt amazing. So it's our job to kind of to push the
boundaries. I didn't want to go for a run and I was pushed for time and I had to get somewhere. But I was actually, and it's funny because if I don't want to do a run, I won't run on the roads. So I didn't do a road run. I'm lucky because I live in the middle of nowhere. I did a cross-country run, put my trail, I had mud all over my feet. My feet were wet, going through the fields. But I heard, you know, I heard a woodpecker, I heard the birds, and you
spring.
Do it, and it's, and oh my God, some of the beautiful flowers that I saw, crocuses
gorgeous,
coming up, daffodils
trees.
Coming up. And like that has totally transformed my whole day. Now I know that that's not necessarily accessible to everybody, but I think, and I've been saying this quite a lot actually on my page, nothing gets it's not easy. So yes, of course you've said, you know, we do this because it's our job. It still doesn't make it easy. And I think people are always looking for that point in whatever they're doing, whether it's running, whether it's yoga, whether it's Pilates. So when's this going to get easy? And it doesn't, because you only get stronger. So the challenge only becomes harder.
Yeah.
You know, once you've run 1K, that's done. And then you've got to look at running that 2K. That's going to be as hard as it was running your 1K. When you start picking up those 3kg weights, you'll be like, okay, this is easy now. And you'll go to pick up those five. So that might be the moment of ease. You'll pick up the 5 and then you'll be like, oh, okay, hang on a minute. It's got hard again. Mm. Like, if it's not hard, it's probably not working, because if it was easy, I mean, there's a saying, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
Well, also, that's really good advice, actually, because, you know, pampering, whilst I'm all in favour of a good pamper, it's actually not that good for you. I mean, it is in certain situations, because, you know, obviously I've come at this as a therapist, but e.g., this is why in Japan they would sleep on a futon. So one of the reasons why traditionally in Japan they have less hours of sleep than we traditionally do is, A, it's permissible in the day to have a nap, and that's that I know. In work offices, it is acceptable. It is a thing. You are allowed to do it. It's actually a sign of hard work that you need a little nap, not a sign of laziness. But they traditionally have, and this is a little bit of a generalisation, but traditionally they do have a little less sleep than us because their beds are hard.
Yeah.
Whereas we have soft everything. But also, I just want to go back for a sec. So first of all, just to say that be careful about pampering, because making it too easy on the body is not good for the body.
Yeah.
The body actually needs a bit of rigour, because that's where mankind have come from.
I mean, my pampering is very non-existent.
Oh, well, mine is not, I can assure you. I am literally hours upon hours. I literally make tools to pamper myself. Oh. I love it. In fact, I came back from Florence this weekend because I was there with my daughter and a friend picked me up from the airport, and out I come with this massive suitcase, and he just looked at me and he was like, how long have you been for? I went, 4 nights. And he went, you are literally joking.
You're
he said,
hilarious.
I take half of this if I'm going away for 2 weeks. And well, A, you're a bloke, and B, you don't need to take all your self-care tools with you, because that is literally my job. So, like, and I can't live without them, because...
But isn't it funny how, and this is what I love about the world and two people, how two people can still be so different and have this amazing, like, connection. Because unlike that, I could literally go away with a pair of pants and a toothbrush and kind of, obviously, like a change of clothes, and sort of be fine with it. Like, I don't need the stuff.
I need the stuff.
I love that.
Like, I don't need it, but I'm happy with it.
But then it makes you happy. And so, and I'm happy with the bet, because I feel like if I had the stuff, I'd probably lose it.
Yeah.
Or I just can't face, like, maybe washing it all when I come back.
Well, you know what? I think what's wonderful about friendships is, like, when you do charts, Barzi chart, which is obviously one of the things I do, and you overlay charts and you see the strengths and the weaknesses, is that actually I think you need a little bit more softness.
Yes.
And I need a little bit more strength. And actually suddenly listening to you and really engaging, like, profoundly, because we talk quite a lot, but, like, now suddenly we've had a really meaty conversation. I'm like, okay, I need to take on a bit more of what you're doing. Maybe you need a
little
bit more.
Yes, I was thinking that when you picked up your tools.
Yeah,
because actually what I have started doing when I have time is a little bit of brushing, kind of, you know, and getting, like, that circulation.
Yeah.
Always when I'm naked doing that, think of you.
Oh, that's good, isn't it, folks? If anyone's out there, when you're naked, it's a Katie moment.
Because I'm always just thinking this is exactly what Katie would do.
With her boob popping
out
of her bra.
No, you know, I'm literally there.
Don't
in my
worry,
pants,
ladies.
Like, kind
and
of doing this.
There are indeed gents in this community. I just thought it was me and James, but it's not. It's like there's other people too. I'm like, oh, shit, I literally need to put some more makeup on. But one other thing I wanted to just go back to, actually, is you definitely need more softness, and I need more strength. And that's a good thing, okay? We all need a bit of everything. But you were talking about the importance of, like, of obviously longevity, because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is about longevity. And, you know, interestingly, Yang Sheng, which is, you know, where this is my book here, you know, this is all about sort of time-tested things that basically make the body healthy. And a healthy body is a longevity body. We're just sort of, we're saying lots of similar things in different ways and then add a difference to it. But because of the story of my life, I've had moments in my life that, despite the fact that I'm a health, you know, expert, I've been incredibly ill.
Yeah.
Okay, and I've been incredibly weak. And I've experienced what it feels like to be disempowered from my own self. And this has actually come from having children, to be honest, because in the natural order of things, well, first of all, I would have been killed off at birth anyway. So by a wonder of Western medicine, I survived childbirth at all in the first place. So in the olden days, at this time 100 years ago, I would never have made it through the starting blocks, but I did, and thank you very much. I'm glad I did. Then everything was basically okay, and then I had my first daughter, and again evolutionary, I am a weakling, so basically I would have been wiped out at that moment, and so would she. We would have both died in childbirth, because that's what would have happened. Now, as a wonder of Western medicine, we both survived.
Yep.
We had an emergency C-section. I'm now moaning to you about the fact that I've got this and the muscles have never recovered, but it created a lot of adhesions. I didn't recover well. It created secondary infertility. And then, wonders of Western medicine, I was then blessed to be able to have donor eggs. And suddenly, a body that's had a baby before was given two strong, healthy eggs with my husband's super strong, healthy sperm. Two babies popped up. And I forced a body that wanted no children to have two at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was absolute carnage for my body, because at this stage now, I am incredibly weak. And the later stages of that pregnancy, my weight had doubled. I mean, I was 20 stone the day I went into hospital. So, you know, from the age of 6 months into this pregnancy, I'm now sort of 16, 17 stone. I've lost all abdominal strength completely. Yeah. My abdominals have completely split in two. I'm absolutely enormous. I've got two full-sized babies and I couldn't move. I was like a little upside-down beetle. I couldn't get up and down off the sofa. I couldn't get in and out of bed. You had to roll me. I mean, this was like, I was not yet hospitalised at this stage, but I mean, it was almost, I mean, I was being checked up like literally several times a week with, you know, I had just everything that could possibly be going wrong was going wrong. And somehow or other, we steadied the ship. It was all okay. Western medicine, acupuncture, you name it, I was doing it. And I came out of hospital. I was incredibly ill after the birth. I was in intensive care for days. And eventually came out, and my body was just in rack and ruin. Yeah. And it has taken me literally 16 years to get myself back. And that's one of the reasons I know what I know, because I needed to know it because I was so ill. And I know what it feels like to be relatively young with no health span, because I was wiped out. Now, I'm glad I did, because I've now got my babies and they're worth it. But, like, you know, I had to piece myself back like Humpty Dumpty.
And it's interesting you say that, because I think it's in those moments, and actually Julia Bradbury says this quite a lot, you know.
Who was that? Well, where you were only last week.
It's when you don't do, and actually it's one of the opening sentences in my book, which is you have 1,000 problems in life until you have the health problem, and then you only have one.
Yeah,
and
so
I think that for so many of us, we don't make change or we don't do anything about it until we have to. And I'm not saying obviously that is your experience, but that what you went through, that trauma, gave you an understanding of actually how precious maybe life was.
Yes, and what
and
it's
how
like
you have to do something.
Yes,
in order to get strong again.
Yes, exactly. I had to piece myself back together again. And what we're all saying, you, me, and Julia, who was here only a couple of weeks ago, is it's prevention, not cure. Don't take your health for granted. We all do. We all do. You and I were talking about it before we sat down officially talking now. We were just kind of going, the problem with the longevity stuff is that people don't really think about it. Because why? Well, because they've got just more pressing things on their to-do list to deal with. You know, are you in your to-do list at all?
Yeah.
Well, okay, first of all, get on it. And the second of all, put yourself number one.
Yeah.
So if you have got a to-do list,
don't be forced to put yourself on the to-do list. I mean, that's the point. When you get that call or when you realise you are ill, and you have to go through this list and go, well, I can't do that because I've got to go and have this treatment, or I can't do that. That's not the time to put yourself on the to-do list. No. The time to put yourself on the to-do list is before.
Prevention, not cure. Now, on that note, I just want to move away from this amazing book, which I really highly recommend everyone looks at. It's brilliant. It's also, it's a zippy read as well.
Yes, I always like to make it simple.
Oh my God, it's zippy, zippy. I mean, literally, I picked this book up. You sent it to me, it was last weekend, I think you sent it to me. Right, and I literally took it away with me and I'd read it on the plane.
Yeah.
Literally, so it was 2.5 pleasurable, like rip with a whole load of folded pages later and I was out the other side. Yeah. I was like, wow, that was great. It
doesn't need to be complicated. And actually, inside as well is that QR code, and it takes people out of the book to a 21-day plan.
And it's really easy and simplified and distilled, which is what it needs to be. Distillation is the key for what we both do, which is we take all of that big stuff out there and we just go, right, this. But one thing I just want to ask you as well, which I think we'll probably end on, is that you were doing something which I want to do. And actually, I was talking to Harriet about going, I really, really, really need to do this, which is you've done some really thorough testing on all your body markers, which I've done some of them, but not all of them. And then you were telling me, which you'll tell everyone about in a minute, all the ones you had. And I had a slight sinking feeling when you were saying it, thinking, oh, I know I'm going to go and do this because I must. But it's the next step of the longevity plan, which is taking advantage of these amazing preventative tests, which unfortunately are not all on the NHS. You do have to pay for them. But but taking charge of knowing.
Yeah, taking ownership of your health. And actually, again, there is a chapter in that. So in the book, that screening about what tests you are entitled to, when we should be having them, and if you haven't had them, how you can go about getting them.
So off you go to your GP.
So push and push and push. So I talk about my diagnosis actually of serrated polyposis syndrome, which is in my colon. And had I not pushed the GPs to, look at that further, I don't know where I would be now, in all honesty. That the first time I had my colonoscopy, they took out about 15 polyps, of which four were about 5 centimetres.
Wow.
And all precancerous. And I've had to go back subsequently 4 or 5 times to clear out all those polyps. And, you know, the NHS have been amazing. So that for me is a point where you're like, that I'm owning this and I'm not going to let that happen to me. So again, it's making sure that I have those tests and living a life that serves the body well enough to keep fighting that. But essentially that's what I was talking about. But I was very lucky that this opportunity came to me where I could have a brain scan, a spinal scan, an abdomen scan, a full heart scan, and all my bloods.
And spleen,
everything.
We love the spleen in this podcast.
And I was terrified because...
Yeah, I would be.
You know, bless Davina, who went to something similar. That's how she found out about her brain tumour. So she just did a random scan. And that's how she found out.
Wow.
So I was quite nervous.
But thank God she did.
Thank God she did. And they did the bloods. And I happened to call only on Tuesday. And I was so pleased because I know I said this to you. Having written a book about longevity solution, I was thinking, what happens if they say, you know, you've got this? And I do always talk about that.
Oh my God, it'd be a nightmare.
I know, but I do always
it's
say.
It's like the Atkins diet.
I know, but also I do think though that even if I was to have got a diagnosis, right, then at least I'm in a strong position to fight it. So that's my other thing to people is like, our life is sort of predetermined in a way of what might come our way.
Yes.
But if I was to have a fall, I know that my bones are strong so that I would be able to come back quicker than somebody who hadn't. If I did get a diagnosis of cancer, I wouldn't have to go, you know, the oncology team wouldn't go, well, you just need to make these lifestyle changes for 3 months so your body's in its best condition so then we can start chemotherapy. Mm. We can start chemotherapy tomorrow because you've got really good markers everywhere else. Like for me, that's what that piece is about. Anyway, on Tuesday they came and I was literally optimal for everything. And I cannot begin to say what a relief that was.
God, you must have slept well that night.
I did. And they did my bloods. And there were things I had been worrying about.
Yeah.
I've had back pain, like we were talking about. It's gone and it comes and it goes. And sometimes I'm running. And all they said was that from one of the scans, they said, you know, do you get a bit back pain? And I said, oh, yeah, you know, every now and then. And I had worried, obviously, because Dr. Google had told me that I had some kind of, you know, hideous cancer. It wasn't. He said, I can see the wear and tear. Aging, totally normal for your body with someone who has led the lifestyle you have in terms of fitness and running. But a couple of facet joints just there, you know, little just wear and tear. Mm. And he said, just, you know, nothing to worry about. There's nothing you can do because it is a natural process of aging.
Stem cells?
But actually, I mean, I haven't thought about that. But actually, I could have been in a worse position if I wasn't doing the things that I was doing. So somebody else.
And then the degenerative process.
So
definitely look at stem cells for that. Genuinely, guys, body tapping is one of the best things. It's one of the main reasons why we talk about body tapping, because the stem cells are generated in the long bones. And so by body tapping all over the long bones, you're basically maximising the production of stem cells. And if you're doing deep breathing techniques at the same time, you're giving them the best possible chance of generation.
Okay, well, I might give that a go. Yeah. And
that's
where it
what's
goes.
Really great about having conversations.
You do the beginners and I'll do the tapping.
Exactly.
And we'll see where we go.
You start doing a bit more pampering and I'm going to do a bit more strengthening and then we're going to see how we get on. Kate, I think we should stop there, but thank you for coming on the show. This has been such an interesting conversation.
It's always
been so amazing and brilliant. But this is her second book. The first one was a brilliant bestseller. So the second one, having read it myself, is like a rip-roaring read. So I would highly recommend
thank
to everyone.
You.
It's packed full of fantastic things that you need to know. So the key thing to say is that if the 20th century was about extending lifespan, the 21st century is about extending health span. Yeah. It is really important to get onto the preventative narrative now, because the quicker you get into prevention, the less you have to worry about cure. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but logic will dictate that the more you pay attention to yourself when the body is whispering, it doesn't have to start going to the talking and then the shouting. And we can start really getting the 21st century as a century where we all start living to 100 years old, having a really great time doing it. So thank you, Kate, for joining us.
No, thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
You're welcome. One last thing that's just come in from the guys is just to remind everyone that our pensions are indeed fucked, so you do need to keep yourself healthy, because otherwise you won't be able to carry on working and you can't afford to live. So on that happy note, I'll see you next week.